Welcome back. What we're going to be looking at now is the meta model. Now, hypnotic language is fun. I trust you've been practicing your Milton Erickson language patterns. And what we're going to share now is what is on pretty well the opposite side of the spectrum. This model is known as the meta model, and it's about gaining specificity in language. And so we've looked at abstraction, which is a higher level of abstraction along the hierarchy of ideas, which is about helping and assisting a client to move into trance and how to utilize your language in a way which is not only persuasive and attractive, but displaces resistance. Now what we're going to look at is how to gain a lot more specificity, so we're chunking down. And what's really surprising about this and what really delights me is that this assists people just as effectively if used in the right context. And what this is about is enriching their maps of reality. The model comes from Virginia Satir, who was absolutely well known for her ability to speak with somebody just very conversationally. And what she'd do was simply gain specificity through the questions she's asked. And through that, her clients would find that their problems would oftentimes disappear. So a conversation with Virginia Satir might go something like this. The client arrives to come and see Virginia Satir, and the client says, "He really hurt me." And Satir would say, "Tell me how specifically." And the client would respond, "Well, because he no longer loves me." And Satir would ask, "And how do you know?" And the client would say, "Well, because when every time I come home, he hasn't done the dishes and he's just sitting there reading the newspaper." And Satir would say, "And how specifically does him sitting there reading the newspaper mean that he doesn't love you?" The client would respond, "Well, you know, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't love me. So now if that has never happened to you, you wouldn't perhaps connect to that story in a way, but that is taken from a real example that happened and it did work. So what she would do was gain specificity with her client and their problems would begin to vanish. And now what it does is, and we'll be looking how this works as we follow through this CD, it's what it does by asking specific questions. It serves to enrich and to broaden and to add richness to an individual's internal map. Because what it does is blows out or challenges what they thought their limits were to their reality. Now, just to recap a little, what we do is we make internal maps of reality, and remember, they cannot be reality themselves. Remember, the map is not the territory. Even the best map of Melbourne could never be Melbourne, even if it was built to scale. Now, in terms of working with clients in doing interactions or a client's map of reality, remember, that can't be real. It's simply their map. Now, their map is constructed of there's 2 million pieces of information or bits of information coming at us every single second. Remember, and I'm sure you do, we only notice or attend to 132 bits, which breaks down to what we call 7 plus or minus 2 chunks of information. We leave out a tremendous amount of information. The meta model, one of the ways it works is it looks to gather back or recall or bring into conscious awareness that which we might have deleted, distorted, or generalized to form our current map. Now, what if what we deleted, distorted, or generalized or filtered out was the very things that we needed to create the change and to move us to cause? And the meta model assists us with creating and assisting our clients to experience that. Now, the meta model is very, very easy to use. It is pretty well the opposite of the Milton model, and you can follow along in your manual if you'd like to. It's entitled The Meta Model. Each of the linguistic constructions that cause ambiguity, remember, cause or assist in trance. Now, for all of those, there is a meta model response which brings somebody back out of that trance or out of hypnosis. Now, remember, there is empowering trance, and then there's the trance that's an unresourceful trance. And what we believe in NLP is if people are at effect in their lives, then they're walking around in a trance of disempowerment. They're just a form of just social settling where they're just going along day by day. And in coaching, what you're wanting to do is to snap them out of that trance through using the meta model, and then you want to use the Milton model to move them back into trance with you and assist them to move them to cause. That's one way you can use the meta model. The other way to think about using the meta model is it helps in recovering the source of information, recovering information that would again assist the client to move to cause. So it isn't just the Milton model. You don't just move them into a trance using Milton model to move them to cause. You use Milton to move them into a trance. You can use Milton to assist them to cause and you can add to your toolkit using the meta model. Now, these tools can be really useful in negotiation as well. Meta model questions can be very useful in debate. And the thing to remember about them is they are actually called the structure of nitpicking. And what that means is you can actually annoy people if you go too far with meta model responses. If you kept asking the question, for example, so how do you know you don't like it? How do you know that? How do you know that? After a while, the person you're speaking with, whoever it is, will start to get annoyed. So one of the things I will say moving into looking at this is to ask the questions with a level of subtlety and gracefulness and soften them a little bit so that it doesn't appear quite as nitpicking as it can. What the meta model is saying to us is that what we have is a surface structure to our experiences of the world, and that that is backed up by a deeper structure below the surface, out of sight, because obviously it's an unconscious level. So there is a specific thought that will get generalized to a general thought, and then that gets distorted in some way through time or through beliefs or values, whatever the filtration system. And then it'll also get deleted, and what we get left with is what we think we remember about an event. So that can mean that very oftentimes the surface structure we have that we believe is our map is the reality. It has little or even no relationship with a deeper, truer structure. And what the mental model does is it gives us an opportunity to recover that deeper structure information to assist the client in moving to cause. A really quick example of this is if you have siblings, remember a time in the past where you're sure something happened and one of your siblings remembers it absolutely differently. Who's right? Well, neither of you probably on some level, because the map is not the territory, but the event has been recalled by both of you according to your maps of the territory, and what you've done is deleted, distorted, and generalized until you're left with what you think reality is. A really simple example. The meta model is designed to recover whatever's there below the surface to assist us in seeing a fuller and richer map. Now, the first one we're going to look at is around distortions. The reason we don't start with deletions, by the way, is there's pretty well deletions in everything we say, including just what I've said. And so you'd be constantly challenging. So we'll start with distortions. And if somebody uses a pattern of the first one, which is a mind read, somebody will say to you, for example, you don't like me. What they're doing here, obviously, is claiming to know your thoughts or feelings without specifying how they came to know that. So just stepping back for a moment, if you remember from Milton language, this is the exact opposite. This is, we use mind reads in the Milton model to assist our client to move into a trance of empowerment with us. Here, we're seeing in the client them using a mind read, claiming to know the thoughts or feelings of somebody else without specifying to know how they came to that. And you're talking to somebody and they say, you don't like me. The response for that mind read is, how do you know I don't like you? And what that does, if you just look at the page, is it recovers the source of the information. So if somebody says, for example, you're angry, you'd respond with, how do you know I'm angry? And if somebody says, well, you always feel that way, you say, how do you know I always feel that way? And so on. The next one is a loss performative. It's a value judgment where the person doing the judging is left out. And remember, again, this is from the Milton model. So the example is given here, it's bad to be inconsistent. And the response to that would be, who says it's bad? Or you could ask, according to whom? Or how do you know it's bad? Another example, somebody could use a loss performative and they could say, it's a good thing to hire a coach. Again, how do you know it's a good thing? Who says it's a good thing? According to whom? All of these would be meta model responses to any of these things to challenge where that came from. And what it does is it gathers evidence and recovers the source of the belief. Think about any coaching experience that you might have had, or even just in general conversations, or maybe you've said something like this yourself. Somebody might say, it's good to do this, or you should never do that, or oh, that's a bad thing to do. All of those things, there's a belief that they're carrying around, and it could be a pretty hardwired belief system they've got. So what you're going to do is, this is your goal, is to shake up their model of the world to such an extent that it causes them to question the source of that belief and to start, it's about loosening it up. Now, when you're doing this, I'm just going to step back for a moment from looking at these. I'd like to share with you that you don't just ask the questions because you've learnt them and you could read them off the page. You ask them and notice, is it, you calibrate, you're using your sensory acuity, which is an earlier CD, to calibrate moment to moment how your client is shifting as a result of you asking these questions. So the client says, it's a bad thing to stretch yourself, and you could ask the question, how do you know that? I'm really curious. Tell me how you know that's a bad thing. And they will imagine what they will start to tell you. They'll start telling you, oh, because when I was younger, this happened and there was a situation where there was a risk taken and it didn't work out for them. And they've made a decision based on this belief that they established years ago to no longer take risks. Well, that's going to be really important information for you to have. Very valuable model to be using. And the next one we're going to look at is cause and effect, where cause is wrongly put outside of the self. If someone uses a cause and effect pattern in the speech, they might say something like, you make me sad. And the challenge for that, if you look at the response, is how does what I'm doing cause you to choose to feel sad? And you could also do a counterexample, which is to ask how specifically. My personal preference is the first one. Decide for yourself through practice which one you prefer. But again, this is recovering the choice here. And remember and take note here that what I've done is deliberately use the word choose. So I'm kind of curious, how does what I'm doing cause you to choose to feel that? The word choose is a presupposition that there is a choice here in their feelings, which is fantastic. You want them to realize that they do have a choice in how they feel. And it causes them to think about, well, okay, if I did choose to feel sad, how did I do that? It immediately moves cause back to self. I like that one. The next one is complex equivalence. This is where two experiences are interpreted as being synonymous. They're considered to mean the same. So the example here is, she's always yelling at me, she doesn't like me. And the response here is, I'm kind of curious, how does her yelling mean that she doesn't like you? I like the next one. Have you ever yelled at someone you liked? They're just a couple of really great responses. And again, what we're doing here is recovering the complex equivalence. Let's have a look at presuppositions. And the example given here is, if my husband knew how much I suffered, he wouldn't do that. Now, let's have a look at the presuppositions here. There is always a presupposition of existence. Obviously, there is a husband in this sentence, but the major presuppositions are one, that I suffer somehow. Two, my husband acts in some way. And three, my husband doesn't know I suffer. And what we're going to do now is challenge these presuppositions. And the first question you could ask is, how do you choose to suffer? I quite like that one. How is he reacting, or how is he acting? Or three, how do you know he doesn't know? I love that question. And the other thing I'd like you to notice about this is that there is hidden within this a cause and effect. The hidden cause and effect here is that she's saying that what he's doing causes her to suffer. So you definitely would ask the question, how do you choose to suffer? Which is really moving the cause back to the client. So I particularly like that one. That's all the first category, looking at distortions. Now we're going to look at generalizations. And the first one is the universal quantifier. Universal quantifiers are examples of all, every, never, everyone, no one, etc. So somebody says, she never listens to me. And what you'd want to do is to exaggerate it. So if somebody says, she never listens to me, you could say, never? Never listens at all? Not even once? So you exaggerate and you're blowing it right up. And this is a great one to use. Because what happens is sometimes they say, for example, oh, everything's a mess. And you go, everything? And the client goes, well, yeah, not everything. And it's just a good way, if it's delivered appropriately within rapport, to help the client realize that it isn't actually everything or never. So you could exaggerate it. And the other response could be, what would happen if she did? So the person says, she never listens to me. And you say, I'm wondering, what would happen if she did? Now, in most instances, the generalization the client's giving is likely not to be true. Remember, we're deleting, distorting, and generalizing. And a generalization, you could say, for example, you know what? Oh, man, nothing ever works. That is a really big generalization. And you would say nothing. And then you get them to reflect and think, well, okay, there are some things that are working. So this is a really powerful way to challenge and to recover moving the client to cause. The next one we're looking at is modal operators of necessity. Somebody says, I have to take care of her, or I should do this, or I should go to school, or I should take care of my family, or you know what, I've just got to go there every day. What you can do is ask the question, what would happen if you didn't? Or what would happen if you did? So somebody says, oh, look, I just have to take care of this. And you say, well, what would happen if you didn't? Now, what that does is it gets their thoughts thinking off in a new direction. And it has the effect of widening their map and getting them to think in new possibilities. Now, because in their map of their world, they're thinking they just have to do this. They have this, that's it. It's not a question. By asking the question, well, what would happen if you didn't? It gives them the opportunity to explore how their world could be different. The next one is the modal operators of possibility. And these are examples of can, can't, will, won't, may, possible, impossible. So, for example, I can't tell him the truth. One of the things you could say is, well, what would happen if you did? You could also ask, what prevents you from telling him the truth? But I like the question, what would happen if you did? The next one we're going to look at is nominalizations. And these, again, are process words that have been frozen in time, making them into nouns. And the example here is there's no communication here. So somebody says there's no communication in this company. The response is, who's not communicating what to whom? Or how would you like to choose to communicate? Somebody says, my relationship is terrible. You would say, what's terrible about the way you're choosing to relate, or what's terrible about the way you're relating? And what you're doing is, and I'm sure you've picked up the pattern, we're taking the normalization and we're turning it back into the verb. The next is an unspecified verb. He rejected me. And I really like this one. Very often you'll hear clients say this, and your response to this would be, and how specifically? And what that does is really specify the verb. The next ones are quite simple. Simple deletions. A simple deletion is an example of I am uncomfortable. And you would recover information. You'd say about what or about whom. There's a lack of referential index where it fails to specify the person or the thing. Example, they don't listen to me. Who specifically chooses not to listen to you, or who specifically doesn't listen to you? And then the last one, a comparative deletion, as in good, better, best, worst, more, less, most, least. An example here, she's a better person. Better than whom and better at what? Or compared to whom, compared to what? Now, this last one, comparative deletions, comes up a lot. A lot of the times you will hear clients say things like, oh, that's better. I would definitely, if it's around a limiting belief, ask the question, better than what specifically? Or I could ask the question, I could start messing up the mental model and start playing. So how do you know? And again, it's just recovering information to assist your client to enrich their map, to move to course, and to see new possibilities. Welcome back. What we're going to be looking at now is metaphors. And metaphors really are stories, but they're stories with a purpose. I'll give you a great example of how you wouldn't use a metaphor. You wouldn't use a metaphor if it doesn't have a purpose to it, or you're telling it because you think it's a funny story. This is when you're working with clients in intervention work. You wouldn't use any stories that just have a punchline for the sake of it. A metaphor is a story, but it has a story that's told with a purpose, and it's designed to assist your client through listening to that metaphor or story to see new possibilities that perhaps they hadn't become aware of until then. Now, what you're doing with the metaphor is pacing and leading your client's behavior through the telling of this story. And there's some major points you need to be aware of that you'll need to do as you construct a story. Now, I'll just give you an overview of this, if you like, in terms of metaphors. In terms of length of time, there's two types of metaphors. There's the metaphor, which takes a little longer, and then there's the analogy, which is just a single line throwaway comment. And we'll go into detail around this in the face-to-face training. But what you're doing, and this will sound a little technical, the first thing you want to do is displace the referential index from the client to the character in the story. In English, you drop their name, so you're coaching Jack. It's no longer Jack, it's Peter the Rabbit. And you're totally displacing the referential index. That's the first step. And then what you do is pace the client's problem by establishing behaviors and events for the characters in the story that are kind of similar to the client's situation. And as you're telling the story, you access resources for the client within this story that are going to be useful for the client and that they could use in terms of overcoming the current situation and moving into cause. And then finish the story so that a sequence of events have occurred in which the characters or players that you've constructed have resolved the conflict, achieved the desired outcomes, and there's just a sense of completion. Now, another way you could do it is everything I've just said, but perhaps not finish the story and let the client decide the ending for themselves. So they're the basic two choices you have with metaphors. A story that I like to share with you, obviously, is I was working with a business consultant recently, and they're really into getting results. It's fascinating to see how driven someone can be. And their focus all the time is in where do we need to be? So where are we going when we do this? If we have this conversation, for what purpose are we having this? And if we're setting up a series of processes, as a result of putting this process into place, what will this give us that we don't currently have? And I remember that he said to me one day, there's three things that you're going to need in terms of building your coaching practice. We had a conversation a few years ago, and I loved what he said, and I wrote it down at the time because I thought it's just so valuable to me. And it wasn't just what he said. He gave me these three tips, which I thought were marvelous and have been really a great foundation in terms of building my coaching practice. But it was more than that. It was the fact that he was so passionate about it. And he was very successful in his own right. And as a result of his passion and the insights that he shared with me, I made a decision in that moment. Another time when I was faced with making a really tough decision, I was able to draw on what he'd shared with me. And that made a huge difference in terms of me building momentum in my coaching practice. And it got to a stage where the coaching practice just really, really built. And I think when I think back to what my business consultant friend told me, that those three things had become crucial. The first thing that he shared with me was that you've got to know your outcome. He was driven about that. And I look back now and I can see why he said that. The second thing he said is, as well as knowing your outcome, you must, ahead of everything else, you must be willing to take action. He said so many people are prepared to create a plan and to conceptualize what they want, but they just don't step up and play it 100% and do what needs to be done. He said that's a must. And the third thing he said was fascinating, and I'll get to that later, but I loved it. I thought that's absolutely what this is all about. So that's an example of telling a story, and I trust as you've heard this, you're all wondering what the third thing is, because the idea is that you build in a sense of momentum in your story. What I also did was slipped in a second story. So I started with my business consultant friend, and I said there was three things, and then I came forward to now and said how I've been using them in my business, and I slipped back to talking about what he'd told me. So just a way you can play with it. So let's look at how we can construct a metaphor for our client. And I just want to share with you that with practice, this all becomes unconscious, and you'll actually get to the stage where you can be in the middle of a coaching session and make up a metaphor on the spot, because you become so familiar with this. To get us started though, let's look at the structure of it. And step one, and again, this is in your manuals, it's under metaphor outline. Step one is to pre-map. And that simply means that you work the work you do beforehand, before you even begin. And what you want to do is to identify the sequence of events that are in question. For example, it could be stress, a conflict in a relationship, work-life balance, wanting to step up, wanting to discover more confidence or courage, whatever it is. Then what you do is you look to see if there's a strategy that contributes to the issue. And then what you want to do is identify new choices. And what you want to do here is very clear that you must have an outcome in mind. You must have an idea of where you're going within this. And along the way, what you might want to do is establish anchors for significant moments. It's not necessary to do that, but it can be a nice touch. The next thing you're going to do is take all the people you have in this event and map them across into characters. And of course, what it says is displace referential indexes. In English, it's just mapping across, that's not even English, but it's changing them into characters, fictional characters. And it could be from fairy tales, it could be from Star Trek, it could be something you make up, it could be from sporting events work really well. It could be anything, it's not important, as long as we preserve the relationship between the characters. Then what you want to do is establish a relationship between the client situation and the situation in the story. And then map over any verbs, i.e. any of the relationships that are going on. And then what you want to do is access new resources or resources they need to be reminded of, which could be done through reminding the client. It's generally everybody has all the resources they need within them right now. Given that, are you teaching them new resources or are you simply reminding them? I choose to believe we're reminding a client of what was already there. Now, I prefer to generally keep the resources deliberately vague so that the client's unconscious decides for itself what's going to be needed to create the change they're looking for. Conscious awareness of what's going on doesn't really affect the process. So the client could go, oh, yeah, they're talking about me. It's still going to be effective. And then what you want to do is to, I personally prefer to keep the resolution ambiguous. You can spell it out and say everything was fantastic, lived happily ever after, or whatever your words are. My preference is that you keep the ending ambiguous so the client can decide for themselves how this is going to be resolved. And then what you might add to that is to future pace as well, just to really make sure the client's neurology is fired up around the change. So let's just have a chat about that. What we're going to do is firstly, what you want to do is to get the present state for the client, and just through asking questions that I'm sure you're familiar with. And then you want to get the desired state of the client. And what you want to do to create the metaphor is to ask yourself the question, what is the present state an example of? And as you ask this, you could also ask, what are they like or thinks important? Because I don't always do it, but I'll give you a great example. I constructed a metaphor for a client who wanted to find more courage and assertiveness within themselves, and I knew they loved netball. And I constructed a story about a 7-year-old girl who on the third time found the courage to play in the netball team. And this meant a lot to that client. And since then, she's created some really great changes that she's so pleased about. And part of that, the change she made and the decision to create that change was because of this metaphor where she absolutely recognized she was a little girl and the netball story was designed for her. Other times I've done stories and created metaphors and I have no idea what the client likes or is important to them, and it's been just as effective. What you could do then is, so remember what you've done is got the present state, the desired state. You've asked yourself, what's the present state an example of? You then could ask yourself, what is the example an example of? So you get even further away from the original state. And then you create a metaphor out of that. And then what you do is you bring the metaphor into the, you tell the metaphor moving into the desired state. And what ideally you wouldn't want a really clear, obvious, conscious connection. You don't want the story to be so similar to the current circumstance that it's too close because they will find objections or reason to resist the story. For example, if somebody has a fear of public speaking, you wouldn't tell a public speaking success story. It's too close to home. What's public speaking an example of? For me, it's an example of finding courage. What's another example of finding courage? It's when I went whitewater rafting. I will tell a whitewater rafting story. And that's how I do it. Now, with this, I personally really highly recommend that you have lots of fun doing it. This, you can, sometimes the mood dictates if they're in a trance with you that you would be a little more solemn perhaps. Other times it's okay to be playful and to tell the story of the sense of just a little bit of joy within you because it's easier to tap into new resources if your client's in a really resourceful and receptive state. So that just gives you a really brief outline of metaphor construction. What we're going to be doing at the face-to-face training is you'll be coming along, we're spending a lot more time on this, and you'll be actually constructing 3 different metaphors for yourself. And if you'd like to get a head start on them, absolutely go for it so you can come prepared. That would be fantastic if you could do that. In the meantime, you've got some fun exercises ahead of you. What I'd love you to do is have a go at constructing metaphors. That'd be the first thing. And also start practicing your meta model responses. And I would suggest, for a sense of playfulness, occasionally ask your meta model questions without the softener, and other times use the softener and notice the profound difference. It is astonishing. Have lots of fun with what you've learned today on this CD. And until we meet again, remember that change isn't by chance, it's by choice.